From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
This is Money Talk for December 10th, 2021. The Bucks are on the East Coast for games with the Knicks and the Celtics before returning home Wednesday with the Pacers. And it's Bear Week. The Green Bay Packers host the Bears Sunday night at Lambeau. Let's start with the Florida double play. Seven doctors contracted COVID after attending a Florida anti-vaccine summit. I guess some things can be both ironic and poetic at the same time. And a Florida man wearing Crocs, don't get ahead of me here, a Florida man wearing Crocs broke into an alligator farm and, of course, was bitten. Sounds like the alligator was making a fashion statement. Here's another crocodile story. A man celebrating his 68th birthday at an amusement park in the Philippines wanted a selfie with what he thought was a plastic crocodile. It wasn't. And one more animal story. In the Belgium zoo, runny snot-nosed hippos are testing positive for COVID. That brings us the question, is there enough Kleenex on the planet? And the Biden administration is releasing oil from our reserves to combat high gas prices. Meanwhile, Canada is tapping into their strategic reserves for a deal with their massive shortage of maple syrup. How many miles per gallon do you get with maple syrup? And our goofy headline of the week, barbershop singers bring joy to school for the deaf. On the podcast today, we have Kyle Tedding, Dave Sandstrom, Paige Radke, Joel Dreesing. And wrapping up the week, here's Bob Landis.
Thanks, Max. And it was a very good week. NASDAQ up a whopping 3.6% this week, tacking on 545 points. The NASDAQ closed at 15,631. Wow. S&P 500 up 3.8% for the week, tacking on 174 points. S&P closed today at 4712. Dow Jones Industrial Average added almost 1,400 points this week, 1,392 points, a 4% rise. We closed at the bell this afternoon in New York with the Dow finishing the week at 35,972. You get a look at what the big money thinks about the inflation report that came out this morning. 10-year Treasury barely at 1.5%, closed this afternoon at 1.49%. Dow is up now 19.7% for the year. S&P is up 27%, wow, with dividends, and NASDAQ up 22%. Folks, that's a quick look at the weekend review. You know, Joel, let's start with you this time around. First-time claims for unemployment insurance, lowest level, more than 50 years.
Yeah, Bob, those are the weekly numbers, and that's, you know, that's those numbers have been moving in the right direction for a long time. You know, we usually look at the 4-week moving average because that evens out the volatility, and that got to like 5.3 million, I think it was, last in May of 2020, and it's, you know, way down. It's below the 54-year average. It's 41% below the 54-year average at 218,000 now. So that's a good measure of layoffs, and it says that employers aren't letting workers go.
Well, we're still 2.4 million fewer workers than before the pandemic started. You know, and yet the economy is significantly larger than pre-pandemic levels. Retail sales is much higher than pre-pandemic levels with a 4.2% unemployment rate. It's going to be challenging for companies to find workers moving forward.
It is, Bob, and it's good to point out that everything seems to be, you know, recovering or recovered or expanding from where we left off before the pandemic, but except for the employment thing. And again, we pointed out last week there are like 5.9 million workers who want jobs but currently aren't in the labor force. They, for whatever reasons, whether they're caring for somebody at home who needs them, or they didn't think they were paid enough to put up with COVID, or you know, they're trying to seek some other conditions or they've gone back to school, but 5.9 million workers still out there that could be part of the solution.
You know, Joel, they say that the reason that half of them give for not going back to work is the inability to find childcare. And it's so strange that we're one of the few developed countries in the world that doesn't offer free daycare and free childcare. You want more workers, you got to figure out how to take care of the little ones. Maybe that'll change in the future. I think it's going to have to if companies keep scrambling for help. But you look at the report overall, tells you that companies are really reluctant to let anybody go. And I think that's a really good sign. It shows the economy is still strong. Shows that the labor market is just really shifting in favor of labor. And I think that's a long time coming.
And Bob, we also had a report this week that employers posted 11 million job openings in October. So that's another sign that the demand is there.
You know, and you think that society may change at some point in time and think more of creating jobs that people actually want. And, you know, you think of so many industries that rely on very inexpensive labor. And I think a lot of those business models are broken now. And a lot of sectors are going to have to rethink their use of low-cost labor. It's just not a viable option at this point in time, clearly, with millions of people still out of work unwilling to come back. You know, Kyle, we had a pretty good turnaround with the stock market, more than recouped losses from the day after Thanksgiving and all of last week. Pretty hard to call. You know, they don't have definitive studies yet, but it looks like the Omicron variant may cause milder illness in people. Bad news is it might spread a little quicker, but it isn't going to kill us. So that's, I guess, is somewhat encouraging news. But the stock market clearly took off just on the hope that that's true.
Yeah, you know, I think that was the hope from the beginning that of this pandemic, that ultimately, you know, if it was going to become an endemic issue where that we had COVID with us forever, that it evolved into something that was less severe. And so, you know, Omicron potentially being a little bit less significant than the Delta variant or some of the earlier variants, I think is a big step. I think the other reminder for investors is that you may want to avoid getting too worked up about short-term market moves. That if you look at, you know, how bad the six trading days were immediately following Thanksgiving, followed by the five trading days this week, you know, at one point in time, the NASDAQ was flirting with correction, you know, from market highs almost down 10% intraday, and then all of a sudden we're, you know, popping right back up near those market highs. And so I think a reminder this week in particular, and really as you put the last two together, to just be a little more patient in your view, let things play out a little bit more rather than simply try to react, because I think we have seen time and time again that stocks tend to pop back pretty quick sometimes. And certainly by the time you're ready to react to the bad news, sometimes it's one piece of good news that can turn things around.
Stocks sure have been volatile this fall. We kind of called that correctly. Typically, folks, you see increased volatility as we get ready for the Fed to start raising interest rates. September stocks lost 5%, give or take. October stocks were up 6.9%, slightly negative in November, not even much to notice. And, of course, December is fabulous so far. So, you know, you take a look at that, and that's jumping around pretty good.
Yeah, and we saw certainly the implied volatility spike in the midst of the reporting of this new variant. I think it only speaks to the fact that not only does some concerns about what the Fed do weigh on kind of our expectations for volatility, but high prices weigh on volatility as well, that when valuations are elevated, pieces of bad news tend to have a bigger impact. Pieces of good news even tend to have a bigger impact because there's just more investors waiting to see what happens next in terms of what they're willing to do with their portfolio. And so I think you put a couple of those things together. I think it implies that as we finish off this year and enter 2022, I wouldn't be surprised by volatility continuing to persist for a while. Certainly, you know, it's something that as investors we prepare for. These even sometimes more intermediate term periods of time in which volatility is elevated, you know, remember that that's what balance is for. It's to get through periods when prices are going to be at their low lows and at their high highs, sometimes, you know, in a span of a couple of weeks. And so I'm certainly preparing investors for that, I think, as we look at how we position portfolios for the start of 2022.
Paige, as you know, the Federal Reserve Board Open Market Policy Committee is meeting next Tuesday and Wednesday. A lot of people are going to be paying attention to that. You know, last month they said that the game plan was to reduce bond buying, $12-13 billion a month. Futures market in Chicago still thinks that the Fed could raise twice next year. I'd be happy with just two rate increases. What's your take on that?
Yeah, so I think when it comes to the Fed, what everyone's going to be looking at is, you know, not only what are they saying, but how is what they're saying changing from what they've said last time. Thus far, they've been very open in terms of their communication. They haven't been changing course unless the data tells them that they should. I think that when I'm looking at the risks that we might see out of that meeting, one might be the increased pace of stopping that bond buying program. Now, of course, that doesn't have a direct impact, but it does impact the liquidity in the market. And so that may be a concern to the smart money investors out there. But all said and done, I think, like you said, two interest rate hikes next year, it's already priced in. And I think if we get those two interest rate hikes, we're going to be in good shape. If they start to signal that they're going to be a little bit more aggressive, you might see some continued volatility. But like you said, anytime we have a period of rising interest rates, you're going to have higher volatility in the stock market, especially in the growth stock names. I mean, we've talked a lot about how interest rates impact their valuations. And so I'm going to be paying pretty close attention to the language and how they're signaling what they might be doing going forward.
And you're aware of the fact that the earnings yield on the S&P now is roughly 4.7%, with a 10-year at 1.5%. Pretty good spread between earnings yields and bond yields. And the whole reason why we keep harping on interest rates and earnings is that you need the earnings yield number to be bigger than the 10-year treasury yield number. You know, if you look at history, well, certainly for half of my career, earnings yields were in the 6-ish percent range, and the bond yields quite a bit lower. And now you have an earnings yield that, you know, can't tolerate a whole lot of higher interest rates, quite frankly. So still pretty good spread between 4.7 earnings yield, 1.5 on the 10-year, and let's hope the spread doesn't narrow. Dave, we've seen a pretty good slowdown in China recently. Turkey's been making the news. Turkish lira's down 35% just in the last couple of months. It doesn't appear to be spreading to other emerging markets. But, you know, we've talked for a while now about waiting to re-enter the emerging world. Valuations are cheap. They're cheaper a reason. But you wonder if the contagion, if you will, is going to spread to other parts of the emerging world, you know, now with the dollar still stubbornly high.
Bobby, you're right. And it is a little bit unusual this time around with Turkey's currency kind of in collapse mode down. I think they're down 35% this year. And typically, other emerging nations are usually sensitive to that, and it doesn't take much to bring those with it. So far, so good. We haven't seen that kind of contagion. We're seeing some interesting things coming out of China this week, where the People's Bank of China has started to relax a few of the bank reserve restrictions, which kind of is counter to the stance that the government has taken early in the year, which was much of more of a hardline approach to kind of leaving some of these big property developers kind of hanging out on a limb. We saw Evergrande and another one of the large developers there default this week. And so there's some concerns there. And I think, you know, we've talked many times on this show about the fact that, you know, we've never had a recession here in the United States start overseas. And the concern has been that China might be big enough and powerful enough that if they go into a deep recession, that could be a big concern for the rest of the world.
You know, and Dave, I think you're right on the money describing the fact that China is between a rock and a hard spot. They've created this property bubble. The only way to keep the bubble intact is to make mortgage money available, reduce reserve requirements at banks, as you just said. But the fact is they've got to wean themselves away from the over-reliance on building infrastructure, which is what created all the wealth in China. And frankly, it's an economic miracle. They lifted hundreds of millions of people out of extreme poverty dramatically, you know, in 30 years. It's unbelievable. But the over-reliance on building infrastructure, economic returns diminish. You know, every time you build a freeway, the return is lower, of course. And they need to shift into a consumer society, which is very difficult, if not impossible, to build when you're not a democracy. So, you know, I think they've got some struggles, continue to keep our eyes on it. Hopefully they'll contain the problems with Evergrande and some of the other real estate developers by switching out debt. Now that, you know, the Turkish lira is declining dramatically, you wonder what's the next shoe to drop and what kind of impact. So, folks, we're trying to pay attention to that. Kyle, back to you just for a minute. You know, when you look at the year-to-date numbers, I think it's very telling how the S&P has diverged from the Dow. And, you know, we all know that the Dow is price-weighted and the S&P 500 is market capitalization-weighted. So what that means in English, folks, is the stocks in the Dow that trade at the higher price have a bigger impact. And what it means for the S&P is the companies in the S&P that have very high capitalizations, i.e. Apple now, almost $3 trillion of market cap, have a bigger impact. And the point simply is that the S&P that is clearly favoring the big cap stocks now is dramatically higher than the Dow is for the year. And I get it, there are other issues like Boeing, a big component of the Dow that's not doing so good. But the market is clearly favoring the giant cap stocks now.
I think what's so interesting about that conversation is just when you look at history and how important the Dow Jones Industrial Average was for such a long time in this country, that it really was reflective of some of the most important American businesses, some of the most more important businesses to our economy. And I think what's happened really in probably the last 25 or 30 years is that there's been a significant shift away from the traditional industrial or manufacturing businesses that long made up the Dow, some of the transports in terms of railroads that made up the Dow, now into, you know, I think a more broad-based and in particular more technology-heavy exposure that our U.S. economy has. And that's more reflective of the Apples of the world. It's more reflective of some of the other businesses that are higher weights within the S&P 500. And so I think, you know, the question we often get is, what's the right way to look at my portfolio? What should I be comparing it to? Because I see the Dow still quoted in the financial press. And I think the Dow maybe not as reflective of kind of broader investment trends than what we've seen in the past. And so I think, if anything, the leadership that's been exhibited by the S&P is a sign of just how strong the U.S. economy has actually been. I think it's a sign of just how strong some of those large U.S. businesses have been. And so, you know, it doesn't mean we simply throw away the Dow. There's a lot of history there. There's a lot of reasons why you still pay attention to it. But I think, at least from a benchmarking perspective, I'm far more inclined to look at the S&P or even some broader measures, specifically market cap weighted measures, as you mentioned, that I think are more reflective of what's going on here in the economy than what the Dow is.
Well, folks, that's the end of yet another Money Talk. Thanks for listening to the show. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.